I'm on the road to recovery, step by step, day by day. I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way.
Okay, let's get started. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Zach. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute silent meditation. Please take a moment to get situated and get comfortable in your seat. And we're going to take this time to connect with God and ask Him to help you focus. So. We can turn the lights down. If you want to join me in the fog light prayer, it's in the cards in the seat in front of you, or if you don't know it, repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light for those who are lost, sick, and dying. You can find your love through me. Amen. From There Is a Solution, from the Big Book. The tremendous fact for every one of us is we've discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And I have asked Nick here to read Spiritual Experience for me. Yeah, Eric, you want to read Spiritual Experience for him?
Eric, recovered alcoholic. Spiritual Experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet, it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in a feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think that this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle, which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer, Alcoholics Anonymous, page 567, 568. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. Please also refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and down during the meeting. This is also a tech-free meeting, so if you could please not text during the meeting, we really appreciate it. That being said, I'd like to introduce our speaker tonight, Russell. This is his 10th week, I believe, and just thank God we've got people who are further along on this path than we are. So nothing else to say, but help me welcome Russell.
Hi, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to see you guys. Good to be back here with you. I see the Medicare row back there. It's good to see those guys. It's good to see you young people here, too. Anything under the age of 50 is young for me, as far as I'm concerned. You're young. Well, it's good to be here. And I'm a member of the Carl Gables group, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. That's right. So today, hey, it's my birthday month. So there you go. Thank you. So it's good to be here. And I want to. Last night I did a. I'm doing a step series down at Sable Palm, and I was on the seventh step, and I happen to like the seventh step a lot. Seventh step is a big step for me because it has to do with humility, which when you're arrogant and defiant and selfish and self-centered, you can use all of that you can get, and I'm not really good at the humility thing, so it's good for me to concentrate and focus, and that's why I like the seventh step so much. But In the seventh, and so it's a problem. I feel like I'm sort of like around the 10th step because it's like the 10th week, but I'm all over the place. But I know all these steps are sort of somehow interrelated. And there is something I want to talk about in terms of the 10th step, but there's an underlying basis to all these things that are sort of like inherent in all the steps, and I want to try to get that across to you. I always try to do something in a meeting when I'm talking about the steps. Anybody know what a kaleidoscope is? You ever look through a kaleidoscope? You know how when you turn it, it turns different patterns and colors? I always want to try to give something at a meeting that's sort of like looking at the steps from a different angle, you know, so that it's something you're not really going to get at other meetings. You know, I'm not going to give you the same old stuff like, you know, how you make the chart or how you mechanically do the steps or stuff like that. And I'm going to try to, and it's very important to me to talk a little bit about my experience. And I'm going to talk a lot about my experience tonight because I do think experience is real important here. And I want to try to meld that into it. The seventh step, I'm going to start at the seventh step, and I'm working into the tenth step, talks about something called humility. It says something to the step, and I'm going to paraphrase for the seventh step because I don't have the 12 and 12. It says the attainment of humility is absolutely necessary in order to achieve some sort of physical sobriety. And it says the principle of humility is found throughout and is a fundamental basis of all the steps, every step we have. And then it says, but if we don't go further and attain more humility, more than is necessary for physical sobriety, we'll never be truly happy. That's what it says. We'll never be truly happy. You know, in Vision for You, it says here and there once in a while, you know, somebody says, you know, feel better. I don't miss drinking at all. Feel better. Look better. Having a better time. Now, let's see. It's right in Vision for You right here. I'm going to read it to you. Now and then, a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half a dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he is not happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he'll know loneliness as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. And as I said in step seven, it talks about how the attainment of further humility, if we don't do it, you'll never really find true happiness. So it's a big deal. You know, you got a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've run into them most of my life here, but I'm not sure a whole lot of people that have attained the kind of happiness they talk about when they talk about the new freedom and the new freedom, the new happiness, that kind of thing. And so I want to talk about that in regards to the 10th step. There is, I've been doing this for 34 years, you know, which is not a record around here. My sponsor is 58 years. I'm sure there are people with more time. And, you know, road testing this thing. You got to road test this thing. You got to take it out on the road. You got to take it through the cancer. You want to take it through the cancer. You got to take it through the deaths. You want to take it through the broken relationships. You want to take it through, hey, you want to take it down useless one out there, US one. You want to take it through traffic jams. You want to take it through bad bosses, bad breaks and misunderstandings. You want to drive it through some. You want to drive it through some bankruptcies from financial debacles. You want to have your, you know, you want to have maybe your license taken away from you. Maybe have some busted credit cards. You want to take it through some, you know, driving while license suspended. You want to take it through life. You want to road test this sucker because this thing ain't really any good. It ain't going to get you anywhere if you do it like in a closet somewhere, right? You know, it's not worth anything if you do it in a class. You want to, and I know we have this idea in our mind. It's sort of like back there, one of these old ideas that I'll be okay as long as everything goes okay. You know, so like, you know, like, why did you do that? Well, they screwed me over at work, you know. Why did you do this? What's wrong with you? Well, my wife did. I know our whole sort of existence is based upon, our whole attitude in existence is based upon this concept that if something's wrong with me, it's because something happened out there. I mean, you know, it's pretty, you know, anybody here ever been upset about anything? Have you ever been upset up to and including tonight, you know? Has anybody ever been upset about something and actually shared what they were upset about with another human being? You know, actually, well, you're alcoholics, you know. As soon as you're upset, you found somebody to talk to about it. You know, I know that. Probably at some meeting somewhere, you know. You probably ruined some meeting somewhere, you know. And some perfectly good meeting where people are having a good time, you had to come in there and say, you wouldn't believe what happened to me. You know? I can't believe this crap, you know. So when you were upset, okay, when you were upset, and some of you are fixing to be upset tonight. Some of you are going to be upset tomorrow, you know. And so you need to pay attention to this because this pertains to you, you know. I love that line. You know where I got that line from? That was from, what's that slasher movie? That thing with the... You guys should know this. It's a young person's movie. There's a one and a two. In any event, it doesn't matter. I'll remember it somewhere during the thing. You know where you know the gal with the samurai blade that's cutting everybody up. Kill Bill. That's a Kill Bill line. I get most of my philosophy from movies. Things like Kill Bill. You don't remember when the gal kills the guy with the mamba, the black mamba. You know the black mamba. And as he's, you don't, how many people haven't seen Kill Bill? You got to go out and see it. And he's dying with the, he got killed with a black mamba. And she says, he says, Biff, whatever his name is, he says, she starts reading about the black mamba. He says, now you need to pay attention to this because this has to do with you. The black mamba bite is the worst bite in the world. But it does. This has to do with you because it has to do with me. Has to do with me, and you know I'm an alcoholic, and you know what? You know if you're an alcoholic and you come in here, your thinking is sort of like, well, nobody's going to understand me. That's why you're always saying things like, well, you don't understand, because you're convinced that you know that how could they possibly understand me? And after you've been here for a few months or a few years, you realize like everybody understands you. You go up to people from the podium and you say, you're telling my you're looking at me. You're telling my and you believe that Like they know you because you start getting the picture that not only are you not unique, that we're all like twins. Got the same feelings, same emotions, same reactions, same everything, you know? Doesn't matter whether you're a girl, guy, whatever it is, you know, basically we're the same deal. That's why, you know, that's why this thing works, you know, because we have the same deal. And in any event, one of the things that I discovered in here is... There's like a mystery going on. There's like as much as I learn about this thing, going along the 34 years or whatever it is I've been sober, there's always an impenetrable mystery about how this thing works. There's always something about this that's impenetrable. There's a lot I understand. There's a lot I get, but I'm always getting the feeling that. There's so much more that I'm not getting. Now, when I first came in, it was really, really clear to me that there was a lot I wasn't getting. You know, that there was something that I hadn't got yet. I keep on going to these meetings to try to listen to these old timers, listen to these people to try to learn something because I knew there was something more, something I hadn't gotten. And even and as I went along, I was given more. You'll be given if you want what we have, and you're only going to any length to get it, if you want this thing, like Bill Wilson said, if you want God, he'll show up. You'll want him enough, he'll show up. And you'll get more. And I've gotten more as I've gone along. But, you know, but here's the problem. The good news is you're going to get more. You know, the three books they read before Alcoholics Anonymous in the first 4 years was Sermon on the Mount, the Book of James. They said they found these books absolutely essential. And 1 Corinthians 13. And in 1 Corinthians 13, it has this line. It says, we see through a glass darkly. He says, but more will be revealed. Soon, everything will clear up. And certainly, a lot of things start clearing up, and I'm going to talk about that. And there's just there's a lot of mysteries. I mean, I'm just telling you, there is mysteries. I've sponsored hundreds and hundreds of men. I really have, over a period of 34 years. And I'll give you a mystery. Why do some people make it? Here's a mystery for you. It'll drive you crazy unless you stop thinking about it. Why do some people make it and some people don't? Do you know there are people that come in here that want to stop drinking and they don't make it? Did you know that? They can't make it. How about this? There are people that come in here that want to stop drinking, and you fall in love with them. You like them. You want them to stop. You'll do anything to help them to stop, and you care about them, and they'll make it. And they don't make it. And then there are people come in here that you can't stand, and you think they're crazy and nuttier than a loon, and there's no reason on God's earth that they should stay sober, and they make it, and they go on for 30 years. Did you know that? I mean, it's like a mystery. You know, like you'll say to yourself, why did he drink? Why did she drink? They'll come up with answers. They'll give you some sort of answers, but the answers really, they sort of make sense, but they really don't make sense. It talks about it in the book. You know, you'll try to figure it out. No matter how long you're sober, you'll try to figure it out until you realize somewhere along the line, there ain't no figuring it out. Although you'll get to a point where you'll sort of like be satisfied with the answer. And the answer, whether you like this or not, has something to do with God. You're going to have to trust me on this one. I've been doing 34 years of research on this deal. Now, why is all this important? Why should it even be important to you? Because we're on the 10th step, right? Now, you all probably think the 10th step is about taking an inventory. How many people think the 10th step is about taking an inventory? You're wrong. No, it's not about taking an inventory. The 4th step is about taking an inventory. Okay? That's what the 4th step is about. I know everybody thinks it's about taking an inventory. I don't think so. I think the 4th step is about taking an inventory. Let me tell you what the operative word of the 10th step is. The operative word. Continued. Doesn't that start? Doesn't it say continued to take personal inventory? Continued. You know why people drink? Because they don't continue. You ever hear? We're always trying to figure out why do people drink? Why do people go out? Why do people stop? You know. You ever hear this line? This is like we're always trying to figure out the answer. You know. By the way, in the book, you know what it says? It says it's a God thing. But we don't like that. We don't like God anyway. They don't like God. We don't like God. We like good orderly direction. We like do the next right thing. We like anything but God. Because if it's a God thing, then we're not in control. Then we're powerless. And it's up to some sort of force that we don't really understand. And we're not really sure of. So we want to really make sure, you know. Now the book says, first of all, we got to quit playing God. Now, if first of all, you got to playing God, one of the things you got to stop doing is stop trying to figure everything out. And for whack jobs like us, that's very hard to do. Because we want to run things, we want to control things, we want to know things. Because when you're scared of the world and you're scared of everything and you're not sure of yourself, you need to know. You need to know everything that's going on in everybody's mind and everything that's going on around you so that you won't get hurt. So this concept of like let go and let God, trust in God and do right and do all that. So yeah, it's not something, it doesn't feel good to us. So we want to know, you know, why are people going on? Why is this happening? So we come up with answers that sort of sound good, that make us feel good for a while. Let me give you an answer that the wisdom of the rooms, you know, this is, you know, we have the big book, we have God, and then we have something called the wisdom of the rooms. That's stuff you hear around the rooms, which sort of you like because it makes sense and it makes you feel good, it makes you coming back, but it really hides the truth. It's not really totally the truth. It's not necessarily bad, but the truth is somewhere, lies somewhere else. You know, I'll give you something. Has anybody ever heard somebody say, the reason people drink is because they stopped going to meetings? Have you ever heard that? Yeah. How many people have heard that? Raise your hand. You heard that. Well, it's not true. Well, it is true, but it's not true. Okay? Yes, the reason people that stop going to meetings sometimes drink, many times drink. That's right. But and so if you hear that, And that's a good thing to hear. It's a good thing to tell people. They told that to me. And if you, so if you hear that, this is what you say to yourself. How many people have ever said to themselves something like this? They hear a couple times, the reason people drink is they stop going to meetings. So you say to yourself, well, there ain't no problem. I'm not going to stop going to meetings. You ever say that to yourself? I'm not going to stop going to meetings. I just won't stop going to meetings. I'll always go to a meeting, right? What you don't realize is the guy that picked up the white chip for the 17th time because he stopped going to meetings 3 weeks ago or 3 months ago was sitting in the same chair you're sitting in, and he said to himself, well, I'm just never going to stop going to meetings. What you don't realize is that the guys that are picking up the white chips because they slip said also to themselves, well, I just won't stop going to meetings. You ever hear somebody say, well, of course he drank because, you know, he didn't do his fourth step, he didn't get a sponsor, he didn't do all these things, all of which are sort of true. But really, that's not the truth, is it? It's not really the truth. The truth is really this. What the real deal is why didn't he get a sponsor? Why didn't he get a sponsor? You know, has anybody ever heard in AA, you guys have been in AA for a little while, has anybody in AA ever heard about the fact that you're supposed to get a sponsor? It's very hard to hang around AA without hearing somebody say you're supposed to get a sponsor. So why would somebody be in AA without a sponsor? You're supposed to work with a sponsor. Some people have sponsors, they don't work with them. You're supposed to go to meetings, you're supposed to do this. So when you start getting into the realm of why do people stop continuing? Because that's what they're saying. When they pick up the white chip and you say, why'd you drink? He says, I drank because I, this is what they say. They say this, I drank because I stopped, and then just fill in the blanks. I stopped speaking to my sponsor. I stopped going to meetings. I stopped taking an inventory. I stopped reading the material. I stopped. Right? So the real question is, why do people stop? Why do some people stop? They stop at 5 months. They stop at 5 weeks. They stop at 5 years. They stop at 15 years. They drink at 20 years. And why do some people never stop? You know, you got to get, I think what you want to do is you want to do that never stop thing, right? Well, it may have something to do. Well, it has something to do with worldly clamors. There's worldly clamors, you know, idolatry, worldly clamors, God or mammon, that sort of fight where you get, you know, you start looking instead of at the stuff that's important, you start looking at the bells and whistles and all the things. It probably has something to do with arrogance. Has something to do with lack of humility. Has something to do with taking credit for your own sobriety. That kind of thing. That selfishness has something to do with that stuff. But the point is, here's my question. If we all go to the same meetings, and if we all read the same book, and if we all hear the same AABS artists, you know, like me, you know, saying the same crap all the time, repeating it over and over again, and we all hear the same fifth step, we all hear the same everything, how come some people, quite frankly, very few, make it for 20 or 30 years, considering the entire amount of people, and some and most people don't? It's like many are called, few are chosen. It's that narrow road. So, you know, I've pondered this, you know, why do people go out, and, you know, they come in here, they do the steps. They seemingly do the steps. They get a sponsor. I've seen guys who have taught the steps, who have done step series, go out and drink. I've seen that happen. I've seen all this sort of stuff happen. You know, the step, this will kill you. I don't believe necessarily the steps are a protection against drinking. Now, this is just my opinion. I'm just telling you, based upon 34 years of watching this thing. You know, I can't tell you, you could do the steps until the cows come home. You could still drink. I can't tell you the steps, doing the steps or going through the steps several times is necessarily going to make you happy. I've seen people do the steps. I've seen them teach the steps. I've seen them get long-term sobriety and go out and drink. I've seen them kill themselves. So what's the deal? What's going on here? You try to figure this thing out. What's the common denominator? What's the glue that holds this thing? What's the glue that holds this thing together? And it has something to do. It has something to do with humility. I know it has something to do with humility because the book says it's something. You know. The other thing is we hide all this in plain sight. You know, the book says all sorts of things. I know it has a lot to do. You see, my theory is based upon the book and based upon what I've learned that it has something to do with faith in God. You see, because I don't want you to miss this deal because I've got this theory based upon not only this but based upon my life. And I'm going to tell you where I got this from because I'm going to tell you a little bit about my experiences and why you'll understand I got this thing. I got this theory that people that develop a faith in God, an unashamed faith in God, over a period of time, and I know it goes through fits, and it's not necessarily always there. Sometimes it's good, but over a period of time, continues to grow a faith in God, will get to the point where they'll be so cemented into this deal and cemented into that faith in God that it will overcome all the worldly stuff that's going to take them away from here, all the worldly problems that's going to take them away from here. They will so focus on God. And oddly enough, I think that sort of matches what's going on in the steps here. You start out with no faith. Then you start suspecting that there's a power greater than yourself that'll get you sane. Then you make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. Then you do all these things like inventory and stuff that basically clears away not only the wreckage, but clears away that thing that blocks you from the sunshine of the Spirit. And then you finally wind up on step 11, which is what you're supposed to do. It's also in Sermon on the Mount, by the way, all this stuff. What you're supposed to do in order to develop a strong faith in God. Now, let me tell you what I've seen. I've actually seen people who have done the steps. All the steps. I know you can find this hard to believe. Given the nature of the steps, given what they say in the steps, you turn your will and your life over to care of God. There is one who has all power. That one is God. You know, may you find him now. You can't manage your own life. No human power can relieve your alcoholism. Only God could and would if he was sought. See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. If you make this decision, a sincere decision for God, all sorts of remarkable things happening, being all-powerful. He gives you everything you need if you stay close to him and do his work well. We never apologize for God. God, 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 God. If a mere code of morals, a better philosophy of life would have helped us, we would have been sober a long time ago. Such codes and philosophies, good orderly direction, do the next right thing, didn't help us. Lack of power was our dilemma. We had to find a power greater than ourselves, which would help us through this thing, and therefore we wrote this book, and this book is about God. The whole thing, God from beginning to end, God, God, God. Do you think it's possible that an alcoholic could be an Alcoholics Anonymous and do the steps, with God all the way through it, and come out the other end, 10 years sober, and not believe in God? It is. You know why? Because alcoholics are crazy. They're nuts. They're crazy and they're defiant. They'll twist. Alcoholics are defiant, arrogant, know-it-all, prideful, selfish, self-centered, crazy people, and it's a very serious disease. And the reason I know this is because I is one. I know it. It is one. We do the craziest things, think the craziest things, and figure out, and we have this fellowship, this incredible fellowship composed of people who are trying to figure out how to change and be happy and do as little of this as possible. Which is why, by the way, people are scared to talk about God a lot at AA meetings because they're scared other people will think badly of them because there's some sort of underlying feeling that even though the whole fellowship in the book is about God, that it's not good to talk about him. So we say higher power, good order, direction, anything so that people doesn't think that we're really like Jesus freaks or anything. You know, we sort of say God, but we don't really believe it. You know, because it scares. You see, you tell newcomers, don't worry about it. We sort of play it down. The whole thing is about God. The whole thing is about developing a relationship with God. You don't get it, you're a dead sucker. You understand what I'm saying? That's the whole thing that holds, is the glue that holds the whole thing together that allows you to continue and focus on that thing. That's the thing that gets, but the bottom line is, that all the literature says that, that's what it's about, God. But we try to figure out a way so we can downplay the major, we major on the minors and do away with the major deal. That's the deal. That's what we do. I mean, I've seen it in A all along. We water it down. So we don't have to do that deal. It's been going on for years. And Bill Wilson, the Bill Dotson story that I read to you the other day, I think I read that thing to you, where Bill Dotson says, I was trying to figure out the answer, and then one day I was with Bill Wilson, and Bill Wilson said to my wife at the table, he said, Henrietta, the Lord's been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I got to keep talking about it and I got to keep telling other people what the Lord's done for me. And Bill Dotson said, I think I have the answer. He said, Bill was so grateful for being sober, so grateful for being sober, and he gave God all the credit. And he's so grateful he can't stop telling other people. He can't stop telling other people. He was passionate about telling other people about God. And Bill Dotson stayed sober for years. And Bill Wilson stayed sober for years. And Dr. Bob Smith stayed sober for years. And they all had that deal down with the God thing. The great fact is this, and just nothing less, that God has become the central fact of our lives. Central fact of our lives means it's more important than sex, it's more important than money, it's more important than anything. It's the one thing you think about, it's one thing you focus on all the time. These guys were focused. They were focused. So I didn't figure this thing out because I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, grew up in New York, you know, young kid in New York. My idea was get a lot of money, make a lot of money, go out with a lot of girls, get married, have kids, become a millionaire, buy a yacht, sail into the sunset. It was all about Playboy magazine and American Express card. So how did a nice young guy like me with the right idea, pretty good mind, became a lawyer and everything, wind up in a situation like this? It has something to do with humility. It has something to do with God. And it has something to do with time. Time. You ever hear the word time? T-I-M-E. Things I must earn. Things I must earn. And this is how things start getting clearer for me. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about my own personal experience because let me tell you what the deal is. This is what's going to happen to you, to some of you. You're going to have the same experience. So as you're going through it, I don't want you to be surprised at what's happening. Now, there's a growth period. There's like growing pains. There's a growth period in AA. You know, I've got 34 years sobriety. Here I am at 34 years. You are looking at the product of 34 years of road testing these steps and God and my faith, which at first was weak and then became stronger, on life. And after 34 years, you know, listen, some of you guys are like 20 years old, some of you are 25, some of you are 30, some are 35. You've experienced a lot of stuff, right? You've experienced a lot of stuff. Well, imagine I experienced the same stuff, only add another 20, 30 years onto that. You understand what I'm saying? All the crap that you've gone through, all the vagaries of life, all the misunderstandings, all the unfair, jerky people, all the disappointments, all the crap that's ever happened to you that you didn't deserve to happen to you, and some of the crap that's happened to you that you did deserve to happen to you, all the stuff you're going through now, you know what I mean? The bounce checks, the not enough money, whatever it is you're going through, whatever problem you have that's driving you crazy, okay, I've been through it. Either the same problem or a little bit different or something like it. And I the sleepless nights, you know, I didn't get any sleep last night. The worrying, worrying about the same thing over and over and over and over again and not being able to stop worrying. Going to meeting and talking about it and feeling good for 30 seconds, then getting in your car and worrying about it again, picking it up again. Having the same worry for a week, a month, a year, that deal. I've been through it. Been through it 150 times, okay? Because I'm an alcoholic. If you got something to worry about, if it's about a girl, if it's about a guy, if it's about romance, if it's about money, if it's about school, if it's about a car, whatever it is, anything worth worrying about is worth worrying about for about a month or two. about 15,000 times a day without getting rid of it, you know what I mean, and being miserable and ending up saying, I wish I was dead. I want to blow my brains out. You know, so I've been there. I've been there, done that, got the T-shirt and the whole bit. So I know that deal. So let me tell you how this thing's going to work on you. It ain't going to be pretty. It has a little bit to do with the sense. You know the seventh step it says? It says how we get a new perspective. It says how do we get humility? You know how you get humility? You know what it says? It says this is how we get a new perspective on things, how we see things differently. Because here's the deal. You've got to come out the other end on this somehow thinking completely 180 degrees differently than you thought when you came in here. You know, what was it Albert Einstein said? And I'll forget this thing. In order to get out of the problem that we find ourselves in, we've got to think at a higher level than the level we thought of that we were thinking to get ourselves into the problem in the first place. And that's why sponsors, and I think I spoke about this last week. I didn't, maybe it was another group. That's why sponsors seem to talk gibberish. That's why when you talk to sponsors, they seem to say things that make no sense whatsoever. You know, remember I said, have you ever been upset in here? And all you raise your hand. Have you ever spoken to somebody about why you're upset? Let me ask you this. When you spoke to somebody, when you were upset the last time, and you spoke to somebody as to why you're upset, and you told them why you're upset, did you know why you were upset? Did you hear what I said? Did you know why you're upset? You were pretty sure of why you were upset, right? So I went up to my sponsor, Joe Snyder, one day when I was 9 years sober, and I told him everything my wife had just done, which was, trust me, terrible. Terrible. Because you know how she is, you know what I mean? And so I gave him chapter and verse, and I've told you the story before, but it's worth repeating, you know. It's worth it. Repetition is good. So I told him exactly what she did, and I told him with passion because I was angry and I was upset. And I knew, let me tell you something, give me an alcoholic who's upset, who tells me why he's upset, he is absolutely sure why he's upset. Who's going to know better than me why I'm upset? You're going to tell me, I know why I'm upset. There's no question why I'm upset. And my sponsor says to me, do you know why you're upset? And that's because sponsors are generally stupid and they don't understand anything. So I said to him, I say to him, 9 years sober, after doing the steps for like 7 years, you know, I say to him, of course I know why I'm upset. He says, so he asked me this question, why are you upset? So I say to him, I just told you why I was upset. He says to me, that's not why you're upset. Now wait a second, let's stop right there. Now I know he's got 30 years. I know I got like 9 years. I know why I'm upset. I just told him why he's upset. He doesn't live in my body. He doesn't live in my brain. He doesn't know why. I mean, how can he's looking at me and he's saying with authority, that's not why you're upset. And I say to him, because he's my sponsor. Now, I didn't understand what humility is, but I'll tell you what humility is. Humility is something like this. I didn't even know I had it. You can have it and not even know it. Humility is, I said to him this. There's two ways of approaching that. You could say, you don't know what you're talking about. You're full of crap. And walk away. Which, believe me, I've sponsored a lot of guys. Some people do that. You sponsor somebody, you'll say to them, you know why you're upset, and they'll say, you're bullshit, you don't know what you're talking about, and they'll walk away. And you'll never see them again. What I said, and I didn't know this was humility, I said, I just told you why I was upset. He said, that's not why you're upset. So this is what I said to him. I said, that's not why I'm upset? That's what I said. I said, that's not why I'm upset. When you say to somebody, that's not why I'm upset, that's like saying, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, for an alcoholic to say, maybe I'm wrong, when he knows he's right, is like a miracle. It's like a miracle. It's like, you know what that is? That's the difference between drinking and not drinking. That's the difference between the men and the boys. That's the difference between growing up and not growing up. To have a sponsor and a sponsor tell you something that you know is stupid, and instead of telling me he's an idiot and walking away, looking at him and saying, that's not why I'm upset, thinking, doubting your own thinking. Maybe I'm wrong. And he says, no, that's not, he says, that's not why I'm upset. He says, no, that's not why I'm upset. That's not why I'm upset. No, that's not why I'm upset. Well, do you know why I'm upset? Yes. You know why I'm upset? Yes. Well, you're going to tell me why I'm upset? Do you really want to know? Well, of course I want to know. Why am I upset? He says, listen, stupid, you're upset because you're upsettable. I didn't understand that. I didn't understand that when he said it. I understand it now. I've understand it now because I've been through the meat grinder. I've been through the meat grinder. I've been through the process. I've been road testing this thing. You learn through experience. I understand it now. Now, when my wife probably does, the world is never going to change. The world, people have been doing what they've been doing for years, for thousands of years. The same crap, the same thing. My wife is still doing the same stuff. It's probably gotten worse because now I got three daughters and my wife, you know, and they're all like clones, you know. I've got it in quadraphonic sound, okay? The only difference is now when they do it, I don't notice it. I don't notice it. They say they do, and if I do notice it, it doesn't bother me. You know, if it doesn't bother you, then it doesn't bother you. You know why? Because it doesn't upset me. Because I'm not upsettable. So how does this thing? So here's the deal. I graduated law school. And I graduated law school. I went to work for the state's attorney's office. I want to make sure I have enough time for this. I went to the state's attorney's office. So this is what they do. You graduate law school. You read all these books. You go there for 3 years, 3.5 years. You know more about the about law than you could possibly imagine. You learn everything about law. You're a compendium of legal knowledge. So I go to the state's attorney's office. They give me a stack of 60, 70 DUI files. This is how they train you. At least back then. They do a little bit better now. And they point you to a courtroom where there's about 200 people, you know, defendants and witnesses and police officers. And there's about 10 or 20 lawyers lined up, all of whom are 20 years older than you and experienced, and some crotchety old judge, and they say, go in there and handle that calendar. And you walk in there, and you're defecating in your pants because you have no idea what you're doing. You've never been there before. You've never done that before. You have no idea what you're doing, and especially if you're a selfish, self-centered alcoholic, you know they're all thinking about you. They're all looking at you. And listen, there ain't no, let me tell you something. It's all, it's like ABC Wild World of Sports, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. It's all done in public. It's all in public, you know. All your failures, all your screw-up, and the judges aren't happy, and the defense attorneys are not there to make your job easier. They know you're new, and they're there to screw you up. And it ain't, and you can't, there's none of this, I'm sorry, judge, the dog ate my homework, you know. There's none of this, you know, can I suck my thumb and go home stuff, or I'm not prepared. This is like you go in there in public and get the shit humiliated out of you. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, it's a horrible, horrible experience. And somehow you get through to the other end, and then you walk out, and of course, if you're an alcoholic or maybe just a human being, all you do is think about how terrible everything was, and everybody's laughing at you and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. And they say, and then they give you a stack of 100 other files, and they say, same thing tomorrow. And then you do the same thing tomorrow. And give you another 100 files, and they say, same thing tomorrow. And you do the same thing tomorrow. And you do it over and over again. And about 3 months down the road, you're running the courtroom. You're like the star of the show. You're going like this, that, and the other thing. You know, you got everything down. You're the star. You're handling everything. It's like second nature. And listen, here's the deal. Not only are you running the show, but there's something you've learned in actually doing the deal, in actually being in there, questioning the witnesses, questioning the project, talking to the judge, there's something you've learned that is some sort of knowledge or wisdom or feeling about the whole deal that is so far above the actual book knowledge you have that you can't even explain it to somebody, They have to go through the experience. You can't explain it. It's like you can write a book about Hawaii. I can tell you everything about Hawaii. You can write a book about Hawaii. You can read the encyclopedia about Hawaii. But there's nothing that substitutes for going to Hawaii. You can go out and explain Alcoholics Anonymous in every way you possibly can for 3 years to a class. But they'll never understand Alcoholics Anonymous until they walk into Alcoholics Anonymous. They'll never get it. And even if they walk into Alcoholics Anonymous, you understand what I'm saying? They won't really understand it until they spend 5 months, 5 years, 20 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because there's something that happens out of the experience of putting yourself in the crucible, some sort of not intellectual knowledge, but some sort of spiritual knowledge that's imbued upon you by doing the deal and living life. And so they say to me next, they say, okay, well, you're doing pretty good here. Now we want you to try felony cases. So they hand you the files. They say, try some of those robbery cases, burglary cases. So you walk in there, you've never tried a robbery or burglary. It's a whole different deal, whole different courtroom, whole different level of situation. You're defecating your pants. You go through the same process, the same deal. And 3 months, six months, 9 months later, you're running the courtroom. You're doing that. You can try these cases, kidnapping cases, doesn't matter, in your sleep. And then one day they say to you, they say, you know something, you're doing pretty good. We're going to make you a division chief. We want you to try first-degree murder cases. Top of the chart. You know what I mean? You know, the best detectives, the best lawyers on the other side, you know, the most skilled judges, the most important cases, death penalty, all that sort of stuff. And they hand it to you, and you go for your first-degree murder case. It's a 12-man jury, not a 6-man jury, and you're defecating in your pants. And you're reading your opening statement and your hands are shaking, you know, and you're doing the worst job you've ever done in your life. And this is after 3-4 years of experience. And then you do it again and you do it again and you do it again. And a year later, you can do these things in your sleep. 2 years later, you're doing this stuff in your sleep. It's like you're running the courtroom. You're in charge. And not only that, there's something about the deal, the courtroom, whatever it is, that you have some sort of knowledge through experience about when to ask the question, how to ask the question, where to move, how to look at the jury, that you have gained that is not in any of the law books, that you can't learn except you've got to be in there, in the crucible, risking yourself, being humiliated, being hurt, you know, being slapped down because of a stupid question, learning by experience, by falling down, by being hurt, by saying stupid things, so that you sort of like, you know the deal. You're in charge. They're looking, say, this guy knows what he's doing. This is the guy in charge. I'm going to watch that guy because that guy knows what he's doing. That guy's in charge. So here's the deal. So you come into, and so things become revealed to you as a child as you gain the experience. My sponsor said to me, he said, Russ, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. And so here's how you come into Alcoholics Anonymous. You come into Alcoholics Anonymous the same way I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, on the balls of your ass, after being humiliated. I was in my one-bedroom bachelor pad. My plans of becoming the Hugh Hefner of Miami fell through because of some bad breaks and misunderstandings. I was broke financially. I was broke physically. I was broke mentally. I was broke spiritually. I had given alcoholism every single thing I had, my wife, my kid, every material thing. I had given it my soul, and it was crying out for more. It was the rapacious creditor. It wanted more. And I couldn't stop drinking. And I walk in and I look at a guy in the eyes after being humiliated at 31 years old, thinking my life was over. And somehow, after 15 years of drinking, after completely screwing up my life, after giving up everything, where it would have been clear to everybody, and I had been told before, all of a sudden, at the worst part of my life, where my mind was, I had like two neurons working, and it wasn't even working right, it somehow occurred to me, flat on my back, to say these words, I need help, I can't stop drinking. I need help, I can't stop drinking. And it became clear as clear could be that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. And it was unmanageable because I was powerless over alcohol. It wasn't clear the day before. It wasn't clear the week before. It wasn't clear the year before. If you had come up and told me that, I would have told you to go hell, mind your own business. Who do you think you are? Even in the face of all that, I would have told you that. But that day, at that time, I was beaten down that low where I got to the jumping off place where I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. It was clear to me. And I became something called, you ready for this? Humble. Humble. Not because I am humble, because I was made to be humble. Made to be humble. So all of a sudden, something that I was absolutely sure of, that I was powerful over alcohol. Listen, I don't drink because I have problems. I know it looks to you like I don't drink. I don't have a drinking problem. I know, seeing from where you are, you think I have a drinking problem. Listen, I don't have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems. As a matter of fact, my drinking perfectly matches my problems. And pretty soon my problems are going to go away, and I won't have to drink anymore, so I appreciate your advice, but why don't you go screw yourself? In other words, my idea is that I'll be okay as long as everybody else is okay, and if I'm not okay, it's because they screwed me. I'm not upset because I'm upsettable. I'm upset because you're an idiot. You know what I mean? And here's the problem. If you're upset because you're an idiot, there's just so many idiots in the world. It's all over the place. You're a dead chicken. There's no hope because I can't control all the idiots. If they'd only make me king of the world and give me a submachine gun, then I can do something about it. But what happens if you're an alcoholic? All you do is just spend your time hating people. Hating people. I mean, you can't go for a day without at least hating 6 or 7 or 10 people. And then the next day, hating more people and thinking about how you want to kill them and how stupid they are and why you slice them up and everything. And, you know, that's the deal. I mean, forget about, oh, sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like, you know. But the bottom line is, torture them and everything. And sure, you can stop drinking, but how do you stop hating people? How do you stop hating yourself? How do you stop doing that deal? So I come here. So, you know, now of course, nobody realizes this stuff when you first walk in. All you know is your palate over alcohol and can't stop drinking. And the only reason you know that is because you got to a place because you were humiliated where you were made to be humble. And when you finally got to the point where you made to be humble, this concept like I can stop anytime I want to, you don't understand, alcohol is not my problem, all of a sudden, In a flash, in a nanosecond, because you were made to be humble, not because you're given any more information, because you were put in a position where you're humble, all of a sudden it's clear to you that your power is over alcohol and your life is unmanageable. Now, here's the problem. What's not clear to you is all the other shit. Because the alcoholism, the drinking, is but a symptom of the disease. The real disease centers your mind and your body. It's why you're restless, irritable, and discontent even when you're sober, and that stuff ain't clear to you at all. At all. And if you're an alcoholic like me, where you're arrogant, defiant, self-centered, and selfish, and self-delusional, it doesn't take long. You come day, you pick up the white chip. You know, when I picked up that white chip, when I said, I need help, I can't stop drinking, I was probably the humblest I'll ever be in my life. You know, I've been working for the last 34 years to try to get back to that attitude. To try to get back to that attitude. The attitude I had when I was the newest guy in AA, and I walked from the back of the room to the front of the room, and I picked up that white chip. So I come up and I pick up this white chip, and let me tell you something. I was so beaten down when they said, say the Serenity Prayer, I said it. When they said, say the Lord's Prayer, I said it. When my sponsor said, read the 24-hour book and ask God's help to stay sober, I did it. I didn't argue. But you know what happens with us? I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous, unemployable. 3 months later, you're underpaid. You know, they should make me the president. You know, they're screwing me. You know, that kind of stuff. And so how do you learn about all the, how do you learn about the resentments? How do you learn about getting rid of resentment? How do you learn about all the other stuff you got to learn here that ultimately becomes clear? It's the same process. You got to get beaten down. Beaten down by life, go through the crap over and over and over again. You got to go through the money problems over and over and over again. You got to go through the firing over and over and over again. You got to go through the broken relationships because you don't know how to have a relationship with another human being over and over and over again. You got to go through every single problem that you have that disturbs you, that drives you nuts, over and over and over. 9 years sober, you're in the same problem with the same crap and the same thinking. You're saying, when is this ever going to stop? And then finally you decide maybe you see something that's a problem, and then you say, well, I can handle it, and you still can't handle it. And maybe 20 years later you actually do something. And the bottom line is, in each time you go through the problem, every time you go through the trials, every time you go through the tribulations, every time you go through it, what happens is ultimately, here you are at 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, you haven't gotten any sleep because you don't have the rent, and they're going to kick you out, and you have no idea how you're going to get it, you know what I mean? And you've been thinking and thinking, no matter how much you're thinking, you can't come up with the money, because thinking won't put money in, worrying won't put money in your bank account. And then finally you get up and you know you don't want to drink, and you're trying to figure out how you're going to make it. And so just for the heck of it, since you can't think anymore and you're tired, you whip open the book Alcoholics Anonymous or the Bible or something, whatever, and you read something and you pray. Not because you want to or anything like that, because you've just run out of choices. And it's not about the drinking anymore, it's about the thinking. And you just pray, God, please help me. And you don't drink, and somehow, some way, it works out. And you learn something. And you do that over and over and over and over again for about 10 years, for about 15 years, for about 20 years. And pretty soon, you're calling on God all the time. Pretty soon, and you know something? You're making it through. You're not drinking. You're handling situations that used to baffle you. You know, stuff that used to drive you nuts isn't driving you nuts anymore. You're handling life like I was handling those first-degree murder cases. And you want to some with some sort of wisdom and some sort of understanding and some sort of knowledge that you never really would get at out of anything except through the experience of road testing your sobriety, of going through the crap while you're working these things. And what you ultimately see, the interesting, crazy thing, and this is the crazy stuff, is when you get to 20 years, 30 years, whatever it is, and you're solid, let's say. And I mean, nobody's perfect. I'm not perfect. Don't put anybody on a pedestal. Everybody's got, I've got my growth. I've got the areas I'm growing in now, stuff I got to do. But when you get to the point where you're no longer agonizing in anxiety all the time, where you have that freedom, where you had that, the deal going on, and you look at and you see and you analyze, like I was saying, why do people go out? All of a sudden it becomes clear. All of a sudden it becomes clear. It's exactly what they say in the book. It's all of a sudden you read the book again, and they're it's been right in front of you all along. It's been right in front of you all along, because now you realize that you are absolutely sold out on AA, sold out on helping people, sold out of this way of life, not worried about losing stuff, not really worried so much about material things. Because the truth is, God has become the central fact of your life. God has become the central fact of your life. And all of a sudden you go to an AA meeting and they read this part of the book. There is a solution where they say this, and there is a solution. If I can find it. The great fact is we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less. We have had a deep and effective spiritual experience which has revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us we could never do for ourselves. You've experienced what they say in the promises, that he is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And all of a sudden, it's not a matter of maybe there is a God, or there possibly is a God. It's absolutely such a part of your experience that God has changed you and transformed you from the boy to the man that you're absolutely clear. And you want to know something? You don't stop continuing, because when you're focused on God and you love God and you're grateful to God, like Bill Wilson was grateful to God, God has What did he say? The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of his terrible disease, that I have to keep talking about it and telling other people, because you can't get rid of the gratitude, because you take no credit on yourself, because you're humble and you realize that you have nothing to do with it, because you were a whack job and you still are, and anything that's going on in your life has to do with them. And I used to ask Bill Wilson, what do you think of people that don't drink but don't go to meetings? He said, I have no use for them because they have no gratitude. Because they have no gratitude. And you start realizing that the thing that allows people to continue doing this is because they know they have gratitude to God and they want to pay him back. And the reason people leave is because they're not grateful to God. And they're not, and because why should they be grateful to God? They did it. Why should they have to go to meetings? They did it. Look what I did. I'm proud of my sobriety. Look what I did. You see, why should you keep on going here and helping people out and be grateful if you got yourself sober and if you keep yourself sober? Because you're so smart, because you did such great fourth steps, because you did such great fifth step or something like that. And you know, listen, I find the people that are focused and grow in faith, and then you look at the book, listen, I'm just going to tell you, we sit here, and every meeting we go to, it says this. This is what it says at the end of the meeting, at the beginning of the meeting. Every meeting you've ever been to says the following. This is what it says. You've never been to a meeting where it doesn't say this. They said it here, probably said it here today. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter of the agnostic, and the personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholics and could not manage our own life. Did you hear that? Anybody ever hear that? That we were alcoholics and could not manage our own life. You know what they're saying? They're saying that you're an alcoholic and you can't manage your own life. That no human power could relieve your alcoholism. That God couldn't would if he was sought. And then it says after that, being convinced of this, convinced, we are now at step three. So this is what happens for the first 10 years, first 5 years, first 20 years. You go to a meeting like this. You hear this read, that you're an alcoholic and could not manage your own life, that probably no human power could have relieved their alcoholism, that God couldn't would if he was sought. You hear that read. You nod your head. You think, hey, that's probably right. You leave the meeting. And then the first thing you do is start thinking about how you're going to manage your life. You start thinking what you're going to do to avoid this, what you're going to do to say that, how you're going to do this, and then you spend the next 8 hours trying to manage your life so that you won't get hurt, so you won't get in trouble. And because you read it and you understand it, but, you know, basically they can't possibly mean what they say, right? You can't manage your own life. You hear it over and over again. It says being convinced. And you look, and here's what happens. You look at me, you think I'm crazy. I know you think I'm crazy, right? You stand up court. What do you do? You just sit around, do nothing? What are they talking about there? You hear the words, but the words don't mean anything. The words don't mean anything until you go through the experience. You see, when you go through the experience of doing everything right and doing everything perfect, and then the doctor tells you you have cancer and you have 6 months to live, you understand that you can't manage your own life. When you go through the experience of living life and you do everything right and you don't drink for 6 years and then a drunk driver hits your car and kills your 3-year-old daughter, then you realize you can't manage your own life. See, when you go through the experience of working for the same firm for 10 years and doing everything you're supposed to do, and then one day they fire you because they're not doing well and you can't get a job, then you realize you can't manage your own life. You have no. You don't even know whether you're going to make. There's not even anybody in this room that knows whether they're going to make it home tonight alive. You don't know whether you're going to get hit by a car, hit in a car accident. Forget about it. Forget. I understand the stuff we're not drinking anymore, so at least we won't kill ourselves drunk driving or anything like that. What about the stuff that's out there that's waiting to happen to you? You know, how many people here have had problems this week or this year that they didn't cause at all? Just by being breathing on the planet, living in Broward County. That was enough. You know, how about those people that just got killed in Paris? 12 people just got killed in Paris, just minding their own business, doing their deal. Maybe that'll happen here. Maybe somebody will walk into this room. You know, we're like ants on a log going down a river. Every once in a while, the log goes to a bend of the river. You get the feeling like you're steering the log. You know, but let me tell you something. As an ant, you're like an ant, you know. You can move a millimeter here and a millimeter there to get less wet, which is what we do. This is what we, you move a millimeter here, a millimeter there. But basically, the log's going where the log is going. And crap, you know, every other word, shit happens. And the shit is going to happen. And the stuff is going to happen. And you're going to get out there, mind your own business. And you're going to leave this room. And what you're going to do is you're going to spend the next 8 hours trying to figure out what you're going to do with your life and how you're going to manage your life. Planning crap. I was at a meeting the other day. I got to share this. It was a guy, he had about a year. I love alcohol. I just love him. I mean, I love him. I'm not making fun of him. I just love him because I am one. And he starts telling me, he says, yeah, my name is so-and-so and blah, blah, blah. He says, I'm 29 years old. He says, here's my plan. I'm going to make $1 million before I'm 35. And he starts telling me, I said, well, how are you going to do that? He says, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to put it together, man. I'm going to do it. I'm going to make $1 million and I'm going to buy a yacht and I'm going to buy a car and I'm going to buy. And it sounds a little crazy, but we're all not that much different. We all got our plans as to what we're going to do in a year, in a 2 year, in a 3 year, in 5 years, in 10 years, I'm going to be here, in 5 years, I'm going to be here, in 6 months, I'm going to be here. Like we have a clue. Like we have a clue. And you know something? Alcoholics. And I'm not saying regular people don't do this. And we believe our own bullshit. We believe it. And then we're shocked when our plans. And you know what it says in the book? It says once we start believing in Him and we perform His work and we get close to Him, we lose interest in our little plans and designs. We gain interest in seeing whether we can help others. We become maximum service to Him and other people. And you want to someone, you lose interest in your little plans and designs. You know what happens? You stop being frustrated when your plans and designs are frustrated because you got no plans and designs. Because your only plan and design is to do His will and try to help other people. And guess what? There are gazillions of other people. They're all over the place and they all need help. And you can help them. That's when you start living an incredible life. That's when you don't leave AA. Why would anybody leave AA? Why would you leave this place? The action is all here. The drunks, the crazies are here. This is where they are. I'm sitting with a guy in a Denny's. We're drinking coffee. It's a Saturday night. When I was a drunk, when I was out there looking for her, you know, believe me, I wanted what she had. I was going to go to any length to get it. But when I was looking for her, I would have thought if I was alone on a Saturday night, I want to kill myself. I'm sitting with some bozo, some guy there, and we're talking about what I'm talking about right now. And he's got like about 3 days, and I got about 10 years. And he looks at me, he says, well, that AA meeting was great, but what do you guys do for fun? And I don't have the heart to tell him I'm having a great time. Why would I not continue? Why would I not continue when I'm so grateful that I'm there and I'm sharing it with this guy and I'm doing this deal? And the only reason I have that is not because of me, but because I actually believe there is a God who's helped me. I give Him credit. And I'm just excited I'm able to do this stuff. Now, if you don't have that going for you, then you'll never get that experience. You'll never get that experience and you'll never understand what I'm talking about right now. And you'll just spend the rest of your life doing what you were doing when you were drinking, thinking about why you don't have a new car, why you don't have a better job, how are you going to make more money, thinking about all those selfish, self-centered things, those material things that you think will make you happy, and being constantly feeling sorry for yourself and upset and frustrated because you've never got enough to make you feel okay. When you could be sitting with some gal or some guy in Denny's, doing His will, right? You understand what I'm saying? Does any of this make any sense? Well, I don't know. It makes sense to me. So thank you very much. God bless you.
Wow, thank you so much. Help me thank Russell one more time. And I better lower this a little bit for our recovered alcoholic secretary, Taylor.
Do we have the secretary report? Hi, guys. I'm alcoholic secretary. My name is Taylor, and I'm looking for my report. Thanks. All right. Keeping with the seventh tradition, which states every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Gary to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify themselves as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Gary, alcoholic, and what it means to be recovered. Thank you. We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered. Yay.
Thank you very much, Gary. From the 1940s-style Big Book sponsorship, from the forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous, of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% or greater success rate. Looks like this is a little rusty. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics in the room? Excellent. Anybody here needing a sponsor tonight? All right, awesome. Let's make sure, gentlemen, take note. Make sure to get them back to God. You want to raise your hand? Stand up, sir. You stand up so everybody can see you. Thank you. And if there's anybody who is too shy, that's fine. Just come to the podium afterwards. We'll get you connected with somebody. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book Study meeting. Fellowship at 6:30. The Big Book Study starts promptly at 7:15. If you should require a Big Book of your own, we have large print editions available for sale. We meet here every Thursday, starting promptly at 8:15 p.m., and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. At this time, I, again, would like to thank Russell. I haven't been here for a few weeks. It was awesome here. Thank you. I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Taylor. If you guys want to catch up with any of the podcasts of this week or any other week that we've been here, we have them all at alcoholicsandgod.org. And I would also like to invite everybody to our Big Book study in the other room Monday nights. So we really get into the mechanics of the book, learn to become better sponsors, and it's just a blast. You should come check it out. Well, all right. We have a great way of closing here. We say the Lord's Prayer sitting down. So, our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. See you next week.
All in my house, I'm gonna let it shine. All in my house, I'm gonna let it shine. All in my house, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. let it shine, 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 let it shine. This the light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This the light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This the light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Everywhere let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine.